Today's episode is brought to you by Yahoo. Show me the football. Are you ready for live football on your phone? With the Yahoo Sports mobile app, you got it. Watch local and primetime NFL games on your phone or tablet all season long. Never miss your local game. Never miss a big matchup. All you need is the Yahoo Sports app. Get the Yahoo Sports mobile app and you are golden.
Welcome to the Ringer NFL Show on the Ringer Podcast Network. I'm Robert Mays, joined as always by Kevin Clark. Kevin, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing a little bit better than you because I don't root for a team with Mitch Trubisky.
Good Lord. It was a long day for me. This was the fourth wedding in 4 weekends. This one was on the road, so I watched football from a bar in Sedona, Arizona, and I watched another extremely frustrating performance from Mitchell Trubisky.
We're going to get there.
We're going to start with Trubisky, but also a couple other quarterbacks that fall under a similar category that we made up. So I think that one of my takeaway from today was just that there were a couple guys that came into the season with, I don't know, optimistic overtones, I guess is what I would say.
Yeah, I would say there's, and so we'll name them really quickly. It's Mitchell Trubisky, Deshaun Watson, and Jimmy Garoppolo. I think
yes.
Watson and Garoppolo are on a different plane. Those are the guys who we think
totally
could have conceivably taken the leap into, you know, elite quarterback status this year. I mean, if everything broke right, that could have happened. We saw in limited sample sizes, both of those guys look absolutely awesome last year. Trubisky was more a projection as far as getting Matt Nagy in there, getting a support system, the new offense built around him. But all three of them, there was definitely good vibes around all three of them 3.5 weeks ago.
Yeah, Trubisky was more so he'd look better with Nagy. He'd look better with those pass catchers. With the other two guys, they were the stories of the offseason.
Yeah.
Like they were two of the names coming into the NFL season, Jimmy Garoppolo and Deshaun Watson. I was working on stuff about both of them. I mean, it was just, those are the two quarterbacks I think everyone had kind of attached themselves to coming into this year. And what I want to chat about tonight before we get into the rest of the show is just how much panic should be associated with their individual situations at this current moment. With Garoppolo and the Niners, it seems like DEFCON 1 full scale. I mean, if his ACL is torn, their season is over.
Yeah, and that's the fear. Kyle Shanahan said that at the post-game press conference. We haven't gotten a definitive word, but it seems to be trending that way. CJ Beathard is not Nick Foles. I don't anticipate. And also, by the way, Carson Wentz tore his ACL on December 1st. It's not like Nick Foles had to navigate 13 weeks of NFL play. Mm. They obviously and don't even have a deep enough roster to carry a CJ Beathard led team for the rest of the way. So that's just it. If Garoppolo's out, they are out. And by the way, we thought they were a year away to begin with.
Yeah, I was optimistic. I thought the offense would be rolling a little more smoothly than it was over the first 3 weeks. I mean, even against that KC team, they didn't necessarily move the ball at will. I hope they're better next year. I have so much faith in that coaching staff, and I think they have a lot of talent. But this kind of resets the timeline a little bit. It's a bad thing for your starting quarterback to tear his ACL.
Yeah.
But it's also one of those things where maybe it's okay that now we're kind of setting them back a little bit and saying, all right, 2019 is when the Niners will be ready to kind of go at this.
Yeah, I mean, I always felt that way. I thought they just hadn't built that roster enough. I felt like they needed one more year, an offseason where they could get some more guys in. Obviously, I thought that a guy like Jerick McKinnon is a good piece in that offense, but he's out for the season. And so I just never thought they were going to contend. I thought maybe if everything broke right, they win 9 games, and then we'll see what happens in the NFC. I always thought the NFC was too stacked for them to make the playoffs this year, but I am disappointed just from a football perspective. We're not going to get to see the best version of the 49ers for 16 games this year.
I totally agree. And one of those things that I was projecting with them was that could their defense be better? Could that group kind of come along faster than we had maybe predicted? And
Richard Sherman looks hurt, by the way, as well.
Was hurt today. Yeah. Okello Weatherspoon has not played well. It just has not broke the way it needed to for them to be a legitimate team in the NFC. So, I mean, you could probably just write their season off right now. And the Niners
are
done.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that.
That's totally fine with me. I mean, whatever you think of CJ Beathard, in that conference, there's just no way. No. So let's move on to the Texans, because I feel like this is obviously a more interesting conversation. Deshaun Watson's still on the field, but I also think that there is legitimate reason to start panicking, because they just cannot consistently move the ball on offense. It's a really bad scenario.
So first of all, Deshaun Watson has bruised ribs, which is the most obvious outcome
possibly
imagine if you've watched the Houston Texans at all this year. Every time you watch him, you say, that's a guy who's going to have bruised ribs pretty soon. Four false starts from the Texans. Don't know why that's happening.
Touchdown call back on a holding penalty, which, again, the most predictable outcome.
Jerome Solomon, who does a great job in Houston, had a column about Bill O'Brien and sort of the, you know, the bad, terrible play calling. And he mentioned that Bill O'Brien spent the entire press conference talking about how many mistakes were made, and he never mentioned the New York Giants, who beat them pretty good on Sunday, because the entire press conference was spent diagnosing his and his team's mistakes. Deshaun Watson is not running the ball on designed carries. They're just happening on scrambles. I don't know why that is. The fact that you put up 385 yards will maybe impress some people. You should not be impressed. They were down 20-3 early, and it didn't get much better from that. A lot of those yards were empty yards. And, you know, at this point, we know what this team is. They have a bad offensive line. Bill O'Brien is not making the play calls to put Deshaun Watson in a position to succeed. It is, as far as their expectations go, it's a disaster.
Yeah, it seems like it's over. I mean, even in the AFC right now, with them being
five teams in history have made the playoffs from 0-3.
Five teams in history, and it just doesn't seem like there's any reason to believe that they're going to transition out of this. Even if you think the AFC is weak, and even if you think that they can maybe sneak in to the wild card at 9-7 or 10-6, there's just nothing I see from this team, especially on that side of the ball, that lends to believing that this is going to get any better anytime soon.
No, there's not. And Bill O'Brien has not done much to encourage us. J.J. Watt had a little bit of a comeback game today. That was nice to see. But
against a third string offensive tackle that was only playing because Eric Flowers is incompetent.
Now, you of all people should be excited about an empty J.J. Watt comeback game.
Honestly, though, he played very well.
There you go.
I caught a lot of those plays. I mean, he had that little swim move down, like bouncing back inside. I mean, it's really impressive tackles for loss against the run. But I'm not... Let's not just like pencil it in quite yet. I mean,
oh no, I never have. I've kind of slow rolled that whole comeback story. But
the only reason Wheeler was in the game is because Eric Flowers can't play, and they still didn't want to do it. Like watching Eric Flowers in the first 2 weeks, they still were apprehensive about benching him.
I don't want to change the subject.
That's all you need to know.
I don't want to change the subject and go on a tangent here. Is Eric Flowers the player you're most surprised is still in the NFL?
I wouldn't say that, and I wasn't even surprised that he was starting, you know, last week, because when you're a guy that's picked in the top 10 and you have that sort of guaranteed money and that sort of contract, we know this. You're going to get your chances.
Yeah,
but it took a lot to put him on the bench. Some
sort of, like, prop would be better, right? Like a barrel?
That was the entire thought about putting Wheeler in today, is because anything would be better. But here's what I'll say, though. If he gets another contract with anyone, even for like pennies, I would be shocked.
When I reported that story at the beginning of training camp about how all the quarterbacks throw in 2 seconds, basically they've basically shaved a second off of their delivery time. One of the things they said was that the offensive reaction because of this has been to just put huge blobs of people on the outside and just hope it takes a long time for the DNs to go around them. Literally wait. People like Eric Flowers are literal time wasters.
Oh yeah.
That's their job. I mean, he can't even do that effectively.
No, it's really, really bad. I liked watching Watt play like that, but I still don't feel, I want to see it against a somewhat better opponent, I guess is what I'd say.
Okay. So what do we do with Watson? How do we save him?
Do you think that Bill O'Brien makes it out of the season?
He just won a power struggle. I mean, organizationally, it's a tough spot to be in because he wins a power struggle. He's got Brian Gain, his basically anointed GM. I don't think his GM, who basically is partners with him, is going to fire him after 1 year. Do you?
No, that's probably true. I mean, I feel like
it's a tough spot for the organization.
The change in the dynamic definitely gives him, you know.
Well, you know, the Eagles did that with Chip Kelly. They only gave him 1 year of personnel control, basically.
Yeah. I mean, it's then just, they brought it's back. Really
I
mean, bad.
It's not, let me tell you something. I have no idea. I'm not reporting this. I'm just thinking about it. What happened when Chip Kelly got fired after 1 year of personnel control? They bring the old guy back. Well, the old guy is basically still, he's on a sabbatical right now. I'm just saying, you could see Rick Smith back there, right?
It's really bad. I mean, they very much look like a team that missed out on a left tackle in free agency and had no first or second round pick to pick an offensive lineman. I mean, that is what the Texans look like. It's
poor
rough.
Deshaun.
But Deshaun was not good today either, man.
No.
He bounced so many balls. I mean, it's just that offense looks so out of sorts. So speaking of out of sorts,
but you can't. I just want to say that you cannot separate his performance from what he's had to go through this year. I mean, just as far as
he's
getting hit
that.
All the time. So if you say, okay, well, he doesn't look good. Well, maybe that's because he's seeing ghosts out there.
That's what I'm worried about with Saquon Barkley. I tweeted that today. It's a very similar scenario. It's like, man, I'm just concerned that this is going to be such a bad environment that he develops terrible habits.
Well, the good
and it
news
just feels
is
like that's
the,
inevitable for Watson.
The Texans
right now.
Have no history of ruining a first round pick with bad offensive line.
No, of course not. No, it has no impact on those guys whatsoever. All right, let's get to more bad quarterback play. We can do this briefly. I just felt like
we're gonna
he made
get to,
sense
just
to
for the
guys.
Listener. We're gonna get to the good players at some point.
Correct. So I'm starting to get really worried about Trubisky.
Did you see? I'm sure you saw the play. Did you see the screen grab where there were four Bears lined up in a sort of trips formation on the right? Only
yes.
Three Cardinals DBs there. So that's just a math problem.
He threw
problem.
The fade to Robinson.
And he just immediate incomplete pass.
Yeah,
to
wait,
left,
that was
to
the fade
other
to Robinson.
Side.
Yeah. That was, I mean, that's a call play, though.
I understand mean, that, but how do you not see that and go, hey, look at this?
It was just. So here's my two problems with what happened. We can do this very briefly. He also missed Robinson on a touchdown throw on that very same drive. And it's just like, I am concerned that – so Matt Nagy made a lot of very troubling decisions today in terms of like field goals going for it, whatever. And I just feel like his lack of confidence in his quarterback has started to short-circuit his decision-making.
Mm.
And again, I also tweeted this, but I felt like the McVay stuff last year gave us a window into how good it can be when your head coach is your play caller. When Nagy has to decide to go for it on fourth down, and he just watched Trubisky miss Allen Robinson in a hole for a touchdown, that's going to affect your decision making. And it is right now. It's a really, really bad thing. And I don't know. I just hope that with more time, he can settle into this offense. But there are guys running open, and he cannot hit people right now. It looks really bad.
I mean, it's a double whammy. He makes bad decisions, and when he makes and on the decisions he makes, they're inaccurate passes.
Yeah,
I don't know what to do with that right now.
Yeah, it is troubling. I'm starting to get extremely concerned.
Before we move on, let's take a quick break. This episode is brought to you by Miller Lite. Look, here at The Ringer, we have our disagreements, but there shouldn't be any debate about this. Miller Lite is the great tasting light beer. With only 96 calories and 3.2 grams of carbs, that's fewer calories and half the carbs of Bud Light, so there's nothing more to talk about. If you have a real argument, let me hear it. Until then, stick with Miller Lite. Miller Lite, hold true. Today's show is brought to you by Burrow. Is there anything harder to move than a sofa? I know from experience, I've moved coast a couple times. It's not something you want to do. Burrow is changing the game with a fully customizable sofa that's easy to move and built to last. The modular design means your chair can become a love seat, your love seat can become a sofa, simply by adding one seat at a time. And it's easy to move in and out of any space. Everything is personalized to you. The arm height, sofa color, leg material, and size. Burrow is the only sofa that grows with you and actually fits with your life. I know we have a Burrow, a couple of them actually, on the lot in our offices. They are incredible. They're comfortable. They're perfect for watching TV, watching sports. We do it all the time at The Ringer. Get $75 off your Burrow sofa at burrow.com/NFL. That's burrow.com/NFL for $75 off. Burrow, furniture that's fit for modern life and home. Now back to the show.
All right, let's move on. So we're going to start with stock down today because we wanted to chat about the Pats to kind of kick this off. How worried are you about the Patriots right now?
Not worried at all.
Okay, that's a totally reasonable answer. I was just curious. I wanted to know.
Here's the thing. So the most worrying thing is they're just absolutely getting their ass kicked in the trenches, right? But we saw this in 2014 and Belichick just figured it out. This is not even approaching the Chiefs game in 2014, which is the last time they started 2-2. They're 1-2 right now, but I'm sure they're going to be 500 very soon. And the Patriots have lost consecutive games by 10 points for the third time in the Bill Belichick era.
That's incredible.
Both of those happened in 2002, by the way, which was their sort of lost year.
Yeah,
that was 5,700 days ago. This number comes from the NFL. Now, the interesting thing to me, aside from the fact that the Lions got their first 100-yard rusher since 2013, which seems impossible. What were you doing in 2013?
Hanging out in Los Angeles. I don't know.
Josh Gordon was really good in 2013.
26. Yeah, he was amazing. He did not play today.
He did not play today. But listen, so did you see Brady's postgame comments?
I did not.
He was really kind of calling out guys in ways he doesn't normally. I mean, and this is just, Brady's always going to be sort of the ultimate teammate. So this is just calling out in Brady's words. But they asked him about James White, who had the touchdown. And he said, the guys who make plays, those are the ones who should be involved. And then, so it was just
interesting.
He wants more James White. That's what he's saying. He doesn't want maybe the first round pick who isn't playing very well. I don't know what he's getting at, but when he says the guys who should be involved are the ones who's making plays, that's a pretty direct indictment of at least some players on the field.
He's not playing very well right now.
He is not.
Brady has not looked impressive over these three games. And I know it was against Jacksonville, but this is against a pretty mediocre Lions defense. And the Patriots' problem is that they have no one on the outside who can win. And I mean, you watched some of those plays today, and it just seemed like the Lions' corners were in hip pockets the entire game. And Slay is very good, obviously, but Philip Dorsett can do nothing.
Oh, did you see? Second Brady quote was about just that. They asked him about one of the interceptions, and Brady said something to the effect of, Slay got his eyes on there before Dorsett. And this is from a guy who very rarely says things like that.
I love what they can do offensively with these weird personnel packages, but it does feel like we're kind of stretching the limitations of what that can be. And when Dorsett can't get open, it doesn't matter how fast he is. So you're really not stretching the defense because Darius Slay can just stay with him step for step in man coverage. So that's what I am assuming they're looking for in Josh Gordon. Is like, can he just take the top off and let us work underneath? Because that's what Brandon Cooks allowed them to do last year. They threw the ball deep a lot, but Cooks also just opens up your offense. And they just do not have that element right
now. Hey, I have a question.
They have, what's that?
Why did they trade Brandon Cooks?
This is the Belichick thing. He tried to trade Gronk.
I know, to the Lions. This would have been a Gronk revenge game.
At a certain point, do you feel like that affects your building? When guys just know they have to be looking over their shoulder every day?
Well, I mean, I there's a couple ways to look at this. Number one is that if you're looking over your shoulder and you're knowing you're sort of, you could get cut at any second if you're not playing at your peak, or maybe your extension is going to come with another team. I think the answer to all of those doubts is to play really, really hard. So that's one way to look at
sure.
it. But yeah, I mean, I think just chemistry wise, I think sometimes it can hurt, but especially if you start to do that stuff in training camp. But you look at, you know, he's made a lot of uncomfortable decisions and 90% of them have worked out. We were talking about Jamie Collins. Oh, wow. Jamie Collins, athletic linebacker. When was the last time you heard Jamie Collins' name?
That's so true. He's like the 17th most talented player.
I mean, Chandler Jones is a really good player, but they won the Super Bowl the year they dealt him.
Yeah. I understand where you're coming from. I'm just saying that, like, with Gronk, it just seems different. I mean, Gronk is not Jamie Collins.
But the Brandon Cooks thing now is very strange to me.
Yeah. I mean, that was just a nice piece. I mean, I understand why you would deal him if he's in the last year of his deal. You can get a first-round pick for him. I understand the value proposition.
You let Amendola go. Julian Edelman is out for the first four games. I don't know if the timing works out where they would know that. But then, you know, you just don't have a lot of weapons right now. And the I know you don't know who you're going to get with that first round pick, but it becomes, you know, one of those first round picks goes to a running back who doesn't look very good. I just feel like they could have allocated.
That's a puzzling decision. As I sit there and think about it now, it's like
they could have allocated those resources a lot better.
Yeah, it's so the way they play offense with this kind of running back centric approach to the passing game, it really requires Brady to be so precise. There's no room for error. There aren't guys that are going to bail you out on these deep balls the way the Cooks could occasionally last year. So when he's not on, it's more apparent because of their style of play.
Yeah, and I mean, they've got James White, but they just need other guys who can do this. As Brady alluded to.
I like Burkhead, but he's been banged up. Well, I mean,
Burkhead
just like,
had a neck injury tonight. I mean, he had a concussion, and you know, obviously those are out of his hands, but at this point, you just need running back depth. I wouldn't be surprised if they try to sign a guy this week.
Yeah, because Hill's out too.
Hill's out for the season.
It seems like, yeah, they're struggling
I'm not even sure. You know, Sonny Michel had a knee procedure, a kind of minor one on August 4th. He's not supposed to be out for the year or anything, but I don't know if he would be playing if it was a normal depth chart right now. I don't know. I truly, when I say I don't know, I'm not suggesting I do know. I don't know. But I'm just saying it was
he does
kind
not
of
look
a quick turnaround
right
for a knee injury like that in the second week of camp.
Quick Lions thought before we move on. I was impressed by them tonight just overall, but is Kenny Galladay the best wide receiver on the Lions?
Oh, Golden Tate still has a lot of talent, as does Marvin Jones.
That's why I'm asking, because I know it's a weird thing to say. He looks amazing.
He looks really good.
Stafford just has those three guys is nuts.
He looks really, really good. And I can't wait to see. I cannot wait to see the Matt Patricia experience, because it's been three completely different games. Completely
so
different.
Yeah, it's been all over
the
place.
He got absolutely destroyed to the damn Jets in the first week. He has a weird backdoor cover, almost won against the 49ers. And now he has this kind of dominating performance against the damn Patriots. What is going on with Matt Patricia?
It's a really good question. I have no idea how to feel about that team. They looked very impressive tonight. Stafford threw the ball well. He had one throw. I can't remember who it was to. It might have been to Galladay, or it might have been to Marvin Jones. He threw it. He placed it right over the corner, right in front of the safety. And it wasn't even that like cover two hole throw that we normally see. It was even a tighter window than that. And it was just perfect. I mean, like, that dude can just really throw the ball. And when he's on, it is fun to watch, especially with those guys catching it.
Can we move to another NFC North team with
Let us with, get to the other NFC win? North team. The Vikings, so sticking with stock down here.
Very much. We're sticking with stock down.
I went back and watched that game just now because it wasn't on where I was sitting. Again, I'm on the road, so it's a little harder to catch everything I wanted to. Every single thing that could have gone wrong for the Vikings in that game did.
What
it was amazing.
What was that? I don't even have analysis for this. Let's go through this, okay? So Josh Allen completed, I think, 68% of his passes against the Vikings defense. Do you know how many of his 27 college starts he completed that many passes in?
Zero.
Six.
Which
That's means
more than
he
I
had
thought.
21 games where the defense played him better than the Minnesota Vikings defense. Texas State, which I did not know as a college. Like, I thought there were like 50 Texas States and they didn't have a football team. You know, it was one of those deals. Were you aware Texas State has a team?
I knew Texas State existed.
Okay.
Yes.
I did not. I haven't watched college football in a number of years, maybe 5 years, probably missed this. This isn't the place Larry Coker was head coach, right? That's Texas San Antonio. What's important here is that Texas State held him to a lower completion percentage than the Minnesota Vikings.
It was a bizarre game. I mean, just the pass protection for Minnesota was bad. The fumbles were just terrible. They had so many penalties.
Total breakdowns. I mean, just had no idea what they were doing.
It was just one of those games where it was so clear early on that it had gotten away from them. And that's why I'm hesitant to kind of like throw too much into this. I think every once in a while, you're just going to have these moments where shit just goes wrong.
That's my next point.
But all right, so we chatted about this briefly. I understand where you're coming from here. What lay out why you think that this is not just an aberration.
I don't know
why you think that this actually might be.
I don't know if it's an aberration or if it's a consistent thing or not. But here's what I do know is that this team played just abnormally badly in the NFC Championship game in a way that just defied everything. And
it all fell apart the same way it did today.
And one of the things that made me believe that the Vikings were going to make the Super Bowl this year, which is something I predicted, is when you watch the NFL Films version of the NFC Championship game, you see that the Vikings defenders are kind of looking at each other and they're literally saying, and they say this when they're mic'd up, they were like, they are out scheming us. Like, this is scheme. We have no idea what the hell is going on. And it was all the RPO stuff. You know, I think Doug Peterson told me they ran about 10% more RPOs with Nick Foles, but it's just a little more than Wentz, but they were running a lot of them. And the Vikings had no idea what to do. And I felt like I talked to Rick Spielman, I talked to a lot of those guys down there, up there, and they talked about, you know, getting ready for the RPO. Mike Zimmer spent the entire summer on it, basically. And I felt like that the RPO and sort of the Eagles machine just sort of broke them a little bit in that game. And now I see this and I'm wondering, why is it that every once in a while the Vikings just play like they have no idea? Like they just woke up and forgot there was a game. Why is this happening?
I can understand that. I know what you're saying. I just felt like today was, there were so many moments early on that just kind of started to snowball. And that's just what it seemed like. Every once in a while, stuff's going to pile up. And the penalties early, the fumble early, you know, Josh Allen scrambling the way that he was.
The Vikings defense turned Josh Allen into Todd Gurley.
But that was like, that was the third down conversion. And like when you, that's just a back-breaking play. You start to break your spirit when all that stuff starts happening. And it just felt like that's what happened today. I am not nearly to the point where I'm worried about the Vikings. I think that their offensive line.
Nor am I. Today. I'm just starting to wonder.
I totally get that. Today just seemed like one of those things where the ball gets rolling downhill and eventually some of these games get away from you. And that's what today felt like to me.
A 15-point favorite as the Bills were 16.5-point underdogs. 15-point favorites had won their last 47 games outright.
It's incredible. One more thing before we move on. I was impressed by Josh Allen today.
Me too.
He has his issues, clearly. But when you watch him play, you can definitely understand how people could get tantalized by the talent. I mean, he's big. He's mobile. He can really sling it. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be a rocky road here, especially with that offensive infrastructure. But he could have been worse. I mean, it's one of those things. It's like I watched him and was like, all right. Like, he's fine. Like, he's better than Mitchell Trubisky probably is. I mean, it's just, I did not know what to expect coming into the season. I guess, you know what? I did know what to expect, and I might have been slightly more pessimistic than I should have been.
I would love to be wrong about Josh Allen. I think that
that'd
be
great.
Fantastic for all of the NFL media, including myself, including everybody here at The Ringer, to just be incredibly humbled by Josh Allen, because this is the take every single outlet had. Like, everybody, there are not a lot of Josh Allen believers outside of a handful of buildings. Clearly they did not watch the Texas State tape.
He played well today, and I was like, all right, you know what, I could understand this. And I did not expect that, especially against a very good Vikings team. But I think the Vikings will be back. I think this is a 1 week kind of blip, and
I agree,
we'll see. But that's kind of where
they're still gonna win the North.
I think that's probably true. All right, one more stock down very quickly. Stock down for anyone who invested their time in Titans Jaguars.
This is the
Blake Bortles problem.
First of all, how dare the NFL put this game on a Sunday?
It's an insult to the storied history of Thursday Night Football.
How dare they? I mean, did they know what kind of tradition they were breaking when they put this game on a 1 p.m. Sunday? You know, if you turned it on, you were transported to Thursday night. That's what happened.
What an unwatchable
it was like
game.
One of those Twilight Zone things. Like, everything went dark. It was all of a sudden November. It was November 13th, and it was Thursday night.
This should not be the barometer for how we judge football games, but if the NFL does like a highway package for every game that they put on YouTube, usually they're like 12, 13 minutes a piece or so. Do you know how long the Titans Jags highlight tape was from today?
Tell me.
4 minutes and 57 seconds.
So Blake Bortles had 155 yards passing.
Jesus.
Blaine Gabbert had eight yards passing. Marcus Mariota on 18 attempts had 100 yards passing. Let's see. Nobody on the Titans or Jaguars broke 60 yards of rushing. Corey Davis led the Titans in receiving with 34 yards. TJ Yeldon led the Jaguars in receiving with 46.
This is why I'm not that concerned about New England. This is the biggest reason.
Is that these two teams might make the playoffs?
Who else is going to beat them in the AFC playoffs?
The Kansas City Chiefs.
That's the only one you throw out there. And I feel like by season's end, the Patriots will be able to put up 45 points against the Chiefs defense.
Yes. I generally agree with that. But I'm saying for right now, yeah. I mean, you have the 3-0 Dolphins. We'll get to them in a little bit. But yeah, I mean, that's the state of play in the AFC. The AFC is an absolute disaster. This Pittsburgh Steelers, we're going to find out a lot about them on Monday night. I mean, there's a real chance. That defense is, I mean, I know they got owned by Mahomes and they did okay against the Browns. They gave up, 16 points. If there's a real chance to go out there and give up a lot of points to Fitzmagic.
I would not be surprised. All right, let's get to the Chiefs. Let's start with some stock ups here. Stock up for the pretty prohibitive conference favorites, I would say, coming out of week three. I mean, the Chiefs just move the ball however they want. That offense is incredible to watch. The touchdown that Mahomes threw on the run to the back of the end zone. Oh my God. His arm is literally like a live wire.
Yep.
That was an unbelievable just rip. Like through decent traffic to the back of the end zone. That guy just can sling it in a way that you just do not see. And the other team that I would throw out there, the Los Angeles Rams are very much for real.
Yes. And then the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah. So why do you want to throw the Eagles in
this
group?
Well, I just wanted to mention Carson Wentz, who returned for the first time since September 1st. So I want to talk about the Chiefs first because that's who you brought up first. Now, Mahomes now has 13 touchdowns, slowed a little bit in the second half. That was the big talking point. And it's almost like I joked about this last week about how Pro Football Focus sort of said that he was stepping up too much in his throws in the pocket. Like if these are the criticisms, if he's not putting up 30 points in the second half or criticizing him, that's
when you've already put up 35, you're up by three scores.
That's a really good sign about Patrick Mahomes and how basically he is flawless. At this point.
I mean, I wrote about this last Sunday, but just the degree of athleticism on that entire offense is so overwhelming. I mean, the fact that Demetrius Harris is their number two tight end, he ran a 4.5 40, but like less than a 4.5 before the draft. It really is the most explosive pass catching group I have ever seen.
Yep. I mean, and this is, I know that this has been talked about a lot as far as the quarterbacks, because John Dorsey drafted Baker Mayfield and Patrick Mahomes, although, you know, Reed was obviously intimately involved in the Mahomes thing. But this is the Green Bay model. This is the explosion. These are the guys they wanted on that offense, and now you're seeing it. And, you know, everybody made fun of the spark thing. I learned a lot of that from my conversations with those types of guys, with people like John Dorsey, with people like Andy Reid. Very early in my NFL journalism career, I talked at length with both those guys about that, and it is showing now how important athleticism is on the football field.
It's funny the Chiefs and the Rams being essentially the best teams in their respective conferences, because I feel like they're such different offenses, but they're the Rams are almost as efficient and dominant as the Chiefs are. You watch the Rams play, and they don't have the type of athletes across the board that Kansas City does. Like, Robert Woods is not a burner. Like, Cooper Kupp is not a burner. But they fit so well in that scheme. And that was the thing that jumped out to me about the Rams today. It's just like, man, they just know how to use those guys so well. Like, Woods had a huge day. Yep. He's so effective in that role. They use Kupp so well. So many cool third down designs. And you know what? We talk about Patrick Mahomes a lot. Jared Goff made some throws today that just like took me out of my seat. He had one to Brandon Cooks that could have been a touchdown that Cooks, you know, he got knocked out of his hands. He had one throw on a third down on the right sideline to Woods that was just gorgeous. And I know that he, you know, system quarterback, whatever you want to say, he's in a great situation, but still is not to be overlooked that this dude has started like 23 games in his career, I guess 29 now. He's a very young quarterback that was the number one overall pick in the draft. Like, he has a chance to be pretty darn good.
Good number tweeted out by JB Long, who's the Rams broadcaster. In the McVay era, which is 19 games, they've put up 30 points 12 times, which is as much as the previous 96 games before Sean McVay. That's all you need to know about how bad the offense was in LA and St. Louis and how good it is now.
They left meat on the bone today, too.
Yeah,
I mean, they missed a field goal. They turned the ball over in the red zone. I mean, like, it seemed like, you look at the box score, they played a perfect game with how many points they put up. They did not. Well, I mean, there were many more touchdowns to be had today for them, which is nuts.
They also have Tlaib and Peters banged up, which is a concern going into a weird Thursday night game against a Vikings team that just got
just
played the weirdest game in the NFL.
We'll talk about that obviously on Thursday. All right, very briefly, let's get to a couple more stock ups before we move on. Stock up, Drew Brees is a hell of a quarterback, man. I mean, that game was fun. I assume there'd be a lot of points in that game. It was even more explosive than we could have thought. Calvin Ridley had a monster day, obviously. But, you know, this is a situation where we knew the defensive regression was coming for New Orleans. And they benched Ken Crawley, which, good for Calvin Ridley, he ate because of it. But that team is going to give up so many more points, and Brees is right there to say, you know what, that's fine. I'll get you 50 if you need it.
So this is the team, as you just said, we knew or we thought we were getting, which is the offense has to bail them out in a way that, I mean, it was pretty spectacular. Drew Brees' spin move, I mean, he's reinvented himself as Randall Cunningham here.
Sure.
Yeah. It was amazing.
Let's go.
Alvin Kamara, 190 yards from scrimmage. I mean, this is just the offense that is going to have to carry that defense. Ryan and Drew Brees put up 5 touchdowns apiece. Ryan's passer rating was 148. He gave up 374 yards, the Saints defense did. This is going to be the Drew Brees team. He's going to have to put up incredible statistics and have these incredible performances because this defense is not going to save them like last year.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, this is what we've seen from them for most of the time he's been there. I mean, there's a reason he set the completions record today. It's because they've needed to throw the ball around like that, and they're game to do it. I just don't know how far that gets you in the NFC, considering how strong the teams at the top are.
Yeah. Last one, Dolphins.
Dolphins are 3-0. We can do this briefly. I'm very impressed by them. I think we forgot what I did, at least. I mean, I shouldn't speak for other people. I forgot what Adam Gase can do with a competent quarterback.
Yeah.
Tannehill looks like Ryan Tannehill, you know. Like,
oh, you mean, wait, you mean a quarterback who wasn't retired until training camp and was filming a reality show?
Yeah. And semi-retired even when he was playing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he was the original Vontae Davis, except he never left.
Yeah, Jay Cutler just stayed in the game.
He retired even though he had mentally checked out. And was just like, I'm going to keep playing.
I've been impressed by the defense. I said this in week one. I'm standing by it. I feel like they tackle extremely well. It just feels like this is a team that looks very put together and very kind of prepared and solid in a way that I just did not expect them to.
Yeah. I mean, I that's why I took them in the wins league, which is turning into
I regret it now.
Well, no, I mean, I'm not going to do anything with it because my other two teams are the Texans and the Patriots.
Yeah. But that's kind of why I'm glad you were the one that got them. But now I'm regretting it because I probably would win that league if I had taken the Dolphins.
You got the Browns?
No, I have the Rams, the Bears, and the Cardinals.
Oh, the Cardinals. Yeah, you're done.
The Cardinals are screwing me.
It's interesting to me. You know, Howard had, I think, I saw a 28 rating, quarterback rating coming into it when they throw to him. He had 2 picks today. He's just really good. And that defense is really good.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Defense, they had a 4th down goal line stand, which I was really impressed by. I just think, you know, do you know they're number one in defensive DVOA?
That's not surprising. I've been super impressed by just watching them in general. They're so sound.
I mean, they
sound.
Got rid of Sue, and I think we're in Ewing theory territory with Sue.
Yeah, it feels that way. Their pass rush, it leaves a lot to be desired. Andre Branch also got hurt today, but they are extremely just on
Branch,
assignment.
Hayes, and Akeem Spence were in varying degrees of unavailable. Akeem Spence got kicked out of the game and on a drive extending personal foul.
Those are always great.
Great, yeah. No, so I mean, they actually played pretty poorly and still grinded this one out. So I was a little bit impressed by that.
That's all you need to say.
They also
about the
had
Raiders,
some weird Vikings-esque just total breakdowns where nobody was covering like Jordy Nelson.
Yeah, that was early in the game. It was bizarre, but I mean, they definitely locked it down.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
That stuff went away. But yeah, the first couple drives were weird from Oakland. It was like, man, there's what is going on right now?
I do feel like we're just going to just keep getting those types of performances every September with limited practice time where there's just going to be games where
a
team just has just forgot how to play football. Happens all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's again, that goes back to the Vikings points.
Well, it doesn't happen in November.
Correct.
Before we move on, let's take one more quick break. Football season is underway, and I'm sure a lot of us already have major regrets about our season-long fantasy teams. It's like you spend all off-season researching and getting excited for the season, and then comes the pain. This year, I believed in too many New England Patriots. I went too all-in on that team. They're not playing as well. It's not good, folks. That's why I'm excited to be playing on FanDuel all season. At FanDuel, you get the excitement of researching and building your team each week. Every week is a new season, so regardless of the outcome, you get to do it all over again. FanDuel has never been more fun or easy. It's the place to play if you're not a fantasy expert. FanDuel has something for everyone, and there are more ways to win than ever before. Like the Gridiron Pick'em contest each week. It's a free contest, and all you need to do is pick winners. No spreads, and $10,000 is split between the top pickers. I know I cannot stop going all in on Patrick Mahomes. He is still a bargain, even if his price rises every week. New users get a $20 bonus when they make their first deposit on FanDuel. Come play with me at FanDuel.com/TheRinger. That's FanDuel.com/TheRinger.
All right, let's get to the challenge flags for this week. We're only going to do a couple of these. Let's start with just the lack of understanding, logic, any explanation for what the hell is a personal foul in the NFL right now.
It doesn't exist. I mean, it's unbelievable. Clay Matthews has three this year. What do you do if you're Clay Matthews? You know, here's the theory I'm working with. So they said, so that Clay Matthews has that BS call last week. And they said, well, we showed that in the video because it was such a correct call, that officiating video. Was the officiating video just telling them to just call more penalties on Clay Matthews? Was that it? The penalty was correct because anything Clay Matthews does is a penalty?
I understand that by the letter of the law, what Clay Matthews did today is roughing the passer because he landed on him. That shouldn't be the letter of the law. Like, how is that a rule that if you land on the quarterback just by virtue of your momentum, it's roughing the passer? I get why you shouldn't be able to lift the quarterback up and drive him into the ground. Like, that is a reasonable rule. That should be roughing the passer. What is Clay Matthews physically supposed to do in that moment in order to not land on the quarterback and still sack him? It's physically impossible.
Here's the problem with the catch rule. The way to avoid the catch rule is to catch the ball standing up, right? Just in the middle of the field, there's just ways you can do it where you take the rule out of the game. My concern with this is there is literally no way to sack the quarterback without incurring something that in some form or fashion looks like a penalty. Now, literally the only thing you could do is do the Michael Strahan thing where Brett Favre just falls down because he likes you.
I mean, the problem was he hit him straight on. When you hit a quarterback straight on, what are you supposed to do?
Yeah, are you supposed to change your angle?
Fall off? Yes, but why would you?
And then if you hit him too low, I mean, it's just if you change the angle, you'll probably get a penalty somehow.
I can understand, you know, the one last week against Minnesota, it was after the throw. You know, you could probably make a bad argument that it was unnecessary just because it was after the ball had been released. This was a sack. It was a sack where he did not hit the quarterback with his helmet and he did not drive him into the ground. If this is going to be a penalty, then I feel like we're in serious trouble.
This is something that I've thought about a lot since the rule was enacted, and I think about it every Sunday now. everyone says you're ruining the game. The NFL, you know, is softening the game, et cetera, et cetera. This is what the NFL wants. The NFL wants Patrick Mahomes with 13 touchdown passes. They want the most touchdowns of any 2 weeks in history, all league-wide, coming into this week. This is what they want. This is what helps television ratings. You know, kind of peak NFL ratings started in 2011, 2012, 2013. I think the AFC Championship game in 2014 got like 60 million viewers because it was Brady and Manning. And the thing that came along with those things is just a massive increase in passing numbers. Started around 2010, 2011. I think for six straight years, there were record-setting passing yardage numbers, record-setting completion percentage numbers. Those just started to spike. The NFL realizes that passing and good passing is good for business. And if you can't get good passing everywhere, especially with a lot of these guys aging out, guys like, you know, the upper ages, you're not going to have Brady forever. You're not going to have Roethlisberger forever. You're not going to have Drew Brees forever. What do? You make it so these guys don't get hurt. They're healthy and they can stand back in the pocket and make throws. This is not a flaw. It's the system the NFL wants.
Correct. But it's a flaw in the watchability of the course product it is. From a fairness standpoint. And I feel like, when you're talking about the other rules, right? You know, so many other rules, like, well, you know, who was it? We were talking about this. Maybe it was Troy Polamalu or Ed Reed talking
about
it.
It was Troy Polamalu. He said that you're going to have to play flag football. And this was in 2008.
Flag football. And this was a decade ago when, like, the Steelers and the Ravens were just, like, knocking each other out on every single play, which is hilarious. But, I mean, it's not hilarious, but it's, like, the irony there is so profound. Those rules you can somewhat work around. And what you said about it being unavoidable is the key thing here. If you are a safety, you can make sure you try to hit a guy in his midsection and not go helmet to helmet, and you can work your game around that. If you're a defensive lineman or a pass rusher, there is no way to work your game around what happened to Clay Matthews today. And that's the part of it that frustrates me.
If you're a fan of a team, anytime a pass rusher is in the backfield, you need to hold your breath. That's just the reality, and it's not going to change. They're not.
This works for the Bears because Bryce Callahan is the one getting all the sacks. So when it's a corner, it doesn't look as violent. So they're not getting flagged.
No, I absolutely think that's real. I mean, we talked about DeAndre Hopkins and you know, even Gronk, two guys who just the defensive pass interference rules just don't apply to them. And it's kind of the opposite for Clay Matthews. I just think there's some guys who don't look menacing and they're not going to get called. You know, I mean, I just, that's just the way it is.
Yeah. It's a really bad thing. I mean, that one today, usually I feel like there's a lot of noise around this and I don't pay a ton of attention to it. It's like, that's the rule. That's like how the game has changed. But that one with Matthews today, I was just like, what are we doing?
Mike McCarthy was very, very mad.
Oh, he was pissed. And I understand that. I mean, that's a key moment. You're trying to come back. That's a tough one. All right, one more here. Let's throw a challenge flag on what is going on with the Dallas Cowboys offense and the defense they were going against today, which included a player who had two interceptions and refused to practice for the Seahawks this week.
You know, there was a guy, he's playing for Tottenham Hotspur, named Ledley King, who didn't have like cartilage in his knees. And he would just not practice. He just didn't practice because he knew that he had to save himself for the game. So he went like years without practicing. We were watching a press conference once, and the manager, Harry Redknapp, was like literally he is disproving all of our theories about how important practice is because he just doesn't do it. Yeah. And he's just really good every time he lines up. And right now we're learning the value of practice from Earl Thomas. And it's not about his knees. It's about just Earl Thomas not wanting to practice. Now, the report,
he said today that if he had a headache, he wouldn't practice.
The report,
which is amazing.
The report from Jay Glazer is that he's holding in, which is the opposite of a holdout. It's where he's in the building.
It's revolutionary.
It's where he's in the building and he just plops down in the middle of practice and decides he doesn't want to practice anymore, which is aspirational, I would say. I don't know.
It's incredible. I'm so proud of him.
And so, no, I
that's what I'm going to do on Thursday's podcast. I'm just going to sit here silently for 45 minutes.
I do think that there's maybe better ways to handle this, but that's, I'm not Earl Thomas. I'm not in that situation, but.
But what are the better ways? Because like we're seeing what's going on with Le'Veon Bell right now. Like, is this not the best way? Because he's getting paid. What are they going to do?
Okay. Here's my question. So he didn't show up.
They're going to fine him intensely.
Thursday and Friday, right? So is he just not going to practice anymore, because I'd rather prefer he doesn't practice and just does things off to the side and then plays than he starts practice and then plops down. Because at least you can plan for that.
I guess I just feel like if you're trying to exert power as an NFL player, I feel like this might be the best way to do it. Because if you're holding out, your leverage is just so limited because you're not going to get your checks. And now he is, but he's still able to express his displeasure. I understand they're going to fine him. I think it's going to be reportedly it's very hefty for contract detrimental to the team, whatever. But it just feels like this maybe isn't the worst way to go about it, even if there are better ways.
So,
like, this to me is a better approach than what Le'Veon Bell is doing.
I tend to agree. Actually, if Le'Veon Bell showed up and did their Earl Thomas plan, which is I'm not practicing, I'm just playing, maybe he just does conditioner during the week. I wonder if the Steelers would go for that. Listen, all the power to Earl Thomas. If this works out for him, I'm happy for him. I'm very, very pro Earl Thomas. I was just thinking out loud that it just seems a little bit rushed. It all just seems very rushed to me as far as just the plan he's enacting. But hey, it worked out. Now, here's the thing we need to mention is that we're not throwing a challenge flag at Earl Thomas or the Seahawks. We're throwing a challenge flag at the team who played Earl Thomas in the Seahawks. And despite the fact that Earl Thomas is, the situation is one of the craziest in the NFL right now, the team they played looks like absolute dog shit. It's the Dallas Cowboys.
They cannot move the ball. Their offense just has absolutely no pop to it whatsoever. I mean, there are some things where you're looking at kind of the landscape of the league coming into the season. You look at a depth chart, everything else, and you're like, this team really lacks in this area. And then you're just wrong. Coming into the year, the Cowboys had no pass catching talent whatsoever. None. And it shows up in every single moment of every single game.
So Dak Prescott, last five games, what do you think his highest passing yardage number is? Last five games.
265.
181.
In the last five games?
Last five games, his high, 181 yards.
That's brutal.
It's not good. Now, what do you do?
I thought that team would be really bad. I'm not getting off that whatsoever. They're 1-2. They beat a bad Giants team. I mean, the Cowboys are not good. No. It is going to be a long season. That defense is not good.
He has not broken 170 yards this year.
Their passing game is horrendous. And when they cannot just run the ball mindlessly because their offensive line is not what it used to be with, you know, Looney in place of Frederick and everything else, it starts to all fall apart. I mean, it was a house of cards. I saw that coming into the year. As soon as Frederick got hurt, I just said, I do not trust what they're going to be offensively. And every single thing I've seen has proven me right.
Dak Prescott, he's busy throwing for 160 or 170 yards the last 3 weeks. 2016, he's behind the best offensive line in football and at the time the best running back. He's got weapons to throw at you everywhere, and he looks like a franchise player that year. They end Tony Romo's career essentially for that reason. Looking at this right now,
a very good scheme and a scheme that fit the things he did well. Everything kind of coalesced in the right way.
Okay, so here's my question. After this year, you do what with Dak Prescott contractually?
So he has one more year left on his deal after this one?
Yeah, but he won't have a fifth-year option because he wasn't a first-round pick.
Sure. So, but he's under contract through 2019.
That's correct.
I think the theory was that
you let him play it out.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because at the very least, so what's the worst case scenario? Let's say he is lights out next season for whatever reason. You know, the line comes back, they find a pass catcher, maybe they change coaches, whatever. Let's say he just is one of those guys that you feel is worth $20 million a year. Then you just franchise him.
Right.
And you figure it out.
The fear then is that he's able to sort of Kirk Cousins it and force his way to free agency because he's so close. I'm just asking questions. I'm just saying if he lights it up, he may not. He may never look like an elite player again. I have no idea what the hell is going on in Dallas. This is why we're throwing a challenge flag. No idea.
If this continues, if this is the version of their offense we're going to see through the entire season, I don't know how you can give him an extension.
Well, I mean, if he doesn't throw for 200 yards for the rest of the season, they're going to need a new quarterback.
Yes. So I feel like you just let him play out the string. And again, let's say they have a great year. things come back around, then you franchise him. But I just feel like you need to kind of be patient.
I want to put that in context. I mean, obviously, he's going to throw for 200 yards at some point. I still think Dak Prescott can be a good quarterback. I'm not saying the Cowboys are going to go out and get another guy or anything like that. I'm just saying I'm ready to believe anything with the Dak Prescott. The rest of his tenure is so up in the air. I'm ready for anything.
I totally agree. Before we get out of here, very quickly, let's predict the headlines for tomorrow. Shoot yours out real quick.
Okay, so I did Bill O'Brien panic last week, and I regret it because now is Bill O'Brien panic. I was a week early on that, and I might be a week early on.
We'll get there.
Be a week early on this, but I think at 0-3, we're going to start to hear some Gruden panic. Now, there was the report that he hired the former NFL scout who was on Twitter for a couple of years saying Miller was going to be a bust. I mean,
that entire story was amazing. I mean, it just seems like it's absurdist comedy at this point.
Yeah. He's basically running a second scouting department, which is nice.
Reading that story and just all the stuff that came out. I mean, just like the fact that he has his own draft board, the fact that like he's trying to be the GM when in reality he hasn't been a head coach in 10 years. Like it just, again, we've talked about this many times. It's even worse than I could have imagined.
It sure is.
I mean, they score a couple quick touchdowns today, and then they just completely hit the wall and cannot move the ball for the final three quarters of the game. God, it's a disaster. I mean, there's just no way around it.
It sure is. All right, what's yours?
I think O'Brien, like, I think some noise is going to start now. I mean, when you're looking at that team, I mean, even though we talked about this, I mean, obviously the fact that he won the power struggle a little bit, the fact that the kind of dynamics there have changed, that's in his favor. But when you're an offensive-minded head coach and your defense is playing well enough to win you games, but you cannot move the ball, eventually that's going to come back on you. And I get that it wasn't up to him to go get some offensive linemen this offseason. They didn't have any resources to do so. But the regression from that offense is just hard to watch. Now, they didn't have a good offensive line last year. And they still managed to be explosive with Watson. And for them to look just this defanged, you know, for the first three games, I just feel like at a certain point, I need to see more or the noise is going to get louder and louder.
You're no complaints here, buddy. It's going to happen. This week, it's going to start.
All right. That's all we got for today. We will be back on Thursday, big Thursday night game. We'll have a lot to talk about, obviously. As always, guys, thank you so much for listening to the Ringer NFL Show on the Ringer Podcast Network.
Today's show was brought to you by FanDuel. Football season is underway, and that's why I'm excited to be playing on FanDuel. FanDuel has never been more fun or easy. It's the place to play if you're not a fantasy expert. FanDuel has something for everyone, and there are more ways to win than ever before, like their Gridiron Pick'em contest every week. New users get a $20 bonus when they make their first deposit on FanDuel. Come play with me at FanDuel.com/TheRinger. That's FanDuel.com/TheRinger.